When you're getting on in years, but not ill, of course, you get very sleepy at times, and the hours seem to pass like lazy cattle moving across a landscape. It was like that for Chips, as the autumn term progressed, and the days shortened till it was actually dark enough to light the gas before call over. For Chips, like some old sea captain, still measured time by the signals of the past. And well he might, for he lived at Mrs. Wickett's, just across the road from the school. He'd been there for more than a decade, ever since he finally gave up his mastership, and it was Brookfield, far more than Greenwich time, that both he and his landlady kept. "Mrs. Wickett," Chips would sing out, "you might bring me a cup of tea before prep, will you?" When you're getting on in years, it's nice to sit by the fire and listen to the school bell sounding dinner, call over, prep, and lights out. Chips always wound up the clock after that last bell. Then he put the wire guard in front of the fire, turned out the gas, and carried a detective novel to bed. He was getting on in years, and as Dr. Merivale had said when he called every fortnight or so, there was really nothing the matter with him. But when Chips had a cold, or when east winds roared over the fenlands, Merivale would sometimes take Mrs. Wickett aside and whisper, "Look after him. His chest, it puts a strain on his heart. Nothing really wrong with him, only Anno Domini. But that's the most fatal complaint of all in the end." Anno Domini. By Jove, yes. Born in 1848, and taken to the Great Exhibition as a toddler. Not many people could boast a thing like that. Besides, Chips could even remember Brookfield in Weatherby's time. In 1870, Weatherby had been an old man. He remembered that day of his preliminary interview. Sunny July, with the air full of flower scents and the plick-plock of cricket on the pitch. Weatherby himself was very fatherly and courteous. He must have been ill then, poor chap, for he died during the summer vacation before Chips began his first term. But the two had seen and spoken to each other. Chips often thought, as he sat by the fire at Mrs. Wickett's, "I'm probably the only man in the world who has a vivid recollection of old Weatherby." Vivid, yes. It was a frequent picture in his mind, that summer day, with the sunlight filtering through the dust in Weatherby's study. "You're a young man, Mr. Chipping, and Brookfield is an old foundation. Youth and age often combine well. Give your enthusiasm to Brookfield, and Brookfield will give you something in return. And don't let anyone play tricks with you. I gather that discipline was not always your strong point at Melbury."
"Perhaps not, sir."
"Never mind. You're still young. It's largely a matter of experience. You have another chance here. Take up a firm attitude from the beginning. That's the secret of it." Perhaps it was. He remembered that first tremendous ordeal of taking prep. A September sunset, more than half a century ago. Big hall, full of 500 unprincipled ruffians, to whom the baiting of new masters was a fine art. Decent little beggars individually, but as a mob, pitiless and implacable. The sudden hush as he took his place at the desk on the dais, the tall clock ticking behind him, and the smells of ink and varnish. The last blood-red rays slanting in through the stained glass windows.
Someone dropped a desk lid. Quickly, he must take everyone by surprise. He must show that there was no nonsense about him.
"You there, in the fifth row. You with the red hair. What's your name?"
"Collie, sir."
"Very well, Collie. You have 100 lines."
No trouble after that. He'd won his first round. And years later, when Collie was an alderman of the City of London, and a baronet, and various other things, he sent his son, also red-haired, to Brookfield. And Chips would say, "Collie, your father was the first boy I ever punished when I came here 25 years ago. He deserved it then, and you deserve it now.